This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your go-to podcast for football betting insights. So much to get through. Once again, Premier League action to preview and review. There's been another managerial sacking and, of course, looking ahead to the best bets of the week. Mark, we'll get on to your beloved Spurs shortly, but let's start with Everton, where once again, there's been change. Rafa has gone, I suspect, to the approval of plenty of Everton fans. Their most recent defeat, the one that ended it all. I think we've come to the consensus now that if teams lose to Norwich City, it's the end for their manager. Rafa's gone. Did you see it coming?
Not as much as you. You were on last week's pod, weren't you? You were saying we were discussing who was the best one. Sort of best bet to go. I thought Ranieri was, just given Watford, and the way that they deal with it, their managers. You said Rafa. You were correct on that one, Jack. So well done. The reason I didn't think it would be Rafa Benitez is because the board had backed him in the row with the sort of director of football, who they sacked, the head of science, who they got rid of. You know, one of the star players in Lucas Digne, who had a bust up with Benitez and, they got rid of him rather than the manager. So, and then within, a month of doing all that, roughly, they've sacked the manager as well, which to me is bizarre, really. It doesn't make any sense to me to sort of really sort of stick to the Benitez path and think that you've got it right. And then all of a sudden just call a halt to it. I think from my point of view, it was absolutely a mad appointment in the first place. Mm. Never thought that Benitez was good enough at this stage of his career to cause the sort of angst that he did. Because I think it doesn't matter what level you're at, a football club always feels like a better place when everybody's pulling in the same direction. You know, the fans like the manager, they like the team that they've got. There's that kind of camaraderie that just goes all the way through, and you can sort of feel it in sort of every press conference. The local journalists are fully behind it, and all of this kind of stuff. So I just think it was the wrong appointment.
Yeah, the reason I thought that it could well be the end for Rafa, not only were they playing some pretty horrendous football, but you just got the sense from the fans that they were completely kind of out of touch with him. And I think once you lose the fans, it's incredibly difficult to get them back on board. The away following that came to Carrow Road on Sunday was probably one of the most toxic groups I think I've seen for quite some time. So it's the end for Rafa. We tweeted out on Racing Post Sport who you think would be the best move for Everton to go next. Wayne Rooney, Duncan Ferguson, Frank Lampard and Roberto Martinez were the options. A resounding victory for Duncan Ferguson with over 40% of the votes. In second place, Wayne Rooney, who's doing a marvellous job at Derby County. And then Frank Lampard and Roberto Martinez with a similar percentage of the vote. Tom said that it has to be Ferguson until the end of the season. The fans won't turn on him. And all of the other names mentioned will cause divide, which is the last thing that Everton need. And I must say, Mark, I agree with that statement. He may well, might not have the best CV out of the four we've mentioned there, but in times like this, you probably just need to unite the fans until the end of the season.
Yeah, I did like the reply from EFL Betts, who said if they're the sort of four most likely candidates, I'd start looking for a new head of recruitment. If that's the best they can come up with. I agree, actually, with Tom. I think that Duncan Ferguson should be given the job and at least sort of, on caretaker interim basis until he proves he can't do it. Because actually, when he replaced, when he came in last time, didn't he, just before sort of Ancelotti arrived, there was, I thought he did well. It wasn't for a long time, but I do think that there is, at least a short-term sort of view of just get everybody galvanised and pulling in the same direction. I think that Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison returning, Richarlison was off the bench, wasn't he? Calvert-Lewin just getting back to full fitness. They've only started three Premier League games together, which, Benitez will point to being a big reason maybe why he lost his job. So I think Ferguson could be walking into a decent situation, with regards to that. But the list, I think, is a complete mishmash. And when you really think that, and this is a bigger problem, this is going to be Everton's biggest problem going forward, where immediately came out that the two they were looking at were Jose Mourinho and Roberto Martinez. I mean, where is this kind of similarities in philosophies with those two managers? You know, they're completely different. You know, you need to work out, doesn't matter if you're a Premier League team or a League Two team, really, you need to work out what you want to be. And I don't think Everton have understood sort of where they are in that sort of ecosystem for a long time now. You know, their signings are nearly always, you know, from and managerial appointments of quite a few of them. You know, if you look at the last few, they've been chasing big names, you know, Ancelotti and Benitez, European Cup winners. They've done that because when they then went for, and Koeman as well was another one that won the European Cup, when they looked at sort of younger up and coming managers, Roberto Martinez being one and Marco Silva being another, it didn't work out. I think that appointing Marco Silva was the right move. I think that Silva is showing at Fulham as well. I don't think he's a bad manager. It didn't work out for him at Everton, but I don't think he's kind of completely lose faith in an idea just because one person doesn't work out. And I mean, I think of those sort of, you want to be looking for the next one, don't you? You want to be looking for the next David Moyes. Where did they get David Moyes from? It was from Preston. It was at that time, sort of, you know, a hungry kind of young manager that didn't have the great strong, you know, connections maybe that Wayne Rooney did. So I mean, is there somebody in the Championship that's doing a marvelous job that you think, yeah, he's the kind of person we should be going for? Is there somebody maybe floating around Holland or Germany, you know, that could do the job? I mean, if I was them, and we've got a question on him later on, Jack, but I would at least ask the question of Ralf Hasenhüttl and see whether he fancied a longer term project. I'm not sure he would, because, you know, that Southampton job's probably, there's a bit more security behind it than Everton. But I think they need to be looking at a philosophy rather than, a name. And that's what Rooney and Lampard are, really, their names. Maybe Rooney does, and he's the one, you know, because he's doing a marvellous job at Derby. But I don't know. I mean, would they be looking for him if he hadn't played for Everton? And, you shouldn't be appointing somebody on a long-term basis just because they played for the team. So I think they need to work out what they want to be. And then from there, you know, they might then be able to take sort of baby steps forward. But it's a long road ahead for Everton, because they've lost their way, really, in terms of transfers and sort of, you know, what they're trying to be, I think.
No, spot on. It feels as if there's a few teams in the Premier League who maybe are lacking that identity. And it's so tough to find when you're just caught up in the rat race, you know, week in, week out. As you may be able to hear, there's a certain spring in Mark Langdon's step today. It may well be because of a recent Tottenham Hotspurs result. We'll get into that after this. Our match of the day this week, it's Chelsea-Spurs coming up on Sunday. Mark, we must speak, though, of the midweek game between Leicester and Spurs. I'll let you take it away. What a miraculous turnaround.
Yeah, obviously. Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, there probably won't be that many Leicester fans listening in because, you know, I remember when Spurs threw away that 3-goal lead against West Ham in the last 10 minutes. I don't think I took in any football content for about a week, which is quite hard in the job that I do. But, you know, it's sickening when you're on the wrong end of those ones. And, you know, I'm sure most football fans have, you know, maybe not to that sort of dramatic consequences, but, you know, most times have sort of been in Leicester's shoes, and it feels horrendous, but being on the right end of it is one of the real joys, isn't it, of being a football fan. I think that Tottenham played really well, actually, at Leicester for a large part of that game, fully deserved the equaliser when it came sort of just before, you know, what we thought was full time. And then, you know, Youri Tielemans, it's a bonkers thing giving the ball away straight from kickoff, but the pass from Harry Kane,
majestic.
It was, and the finish from Bergwijn still had a lot to do. When he went round Schmeichel, there was only really one place he could score, and that was really in off the post. And you know, Antonio Conte had said almost from the start when he arrived that he saw Steven Bergwijn as a centre-forward and a striker and the best understudy, really, to Harry Kane. I thought that was a ridiculous view, to be honest. And it turns out Antonio Conte knows a little bit more about football than me. Who knew?
I feel as if not enough was made of that pass from Harry Kane, just because it was so caught up in the, you know, it was a bonkers final few minutes. But it was a really, really good pass.
It was Kane's best performance in a Spurs shirt for a long, long time. There's no doubt about that. He celebrated wildly at the end. He was sort of in with the supporters. And, you know, there's been that missing connection, obviously, since the summer. And even towards the kind of end, when they sat Mourinho, actually Kane was one of the few that had a good relationship with Mourinho. And I think he felt from that moment, you know, like, where's the club going? And he didn't look really up for it for those last few months of last season, even though he was doing well personally. Just there was something missing, and it's been missing for most of this season as well. But he was really, really hungry for the game. I mean, there is an amazing sequence after the goal, Jack, that where Lucas Moura jumps on a steward's back and gets a piggyback off of him. I don't think the steward particularly enjoyed it, but Lucas was...
Didn't I see him steal a bobble hat as well?
One of the supporters with the Tottenham bobble hat was celebrating with Bergwijn. He just took it off his head and just chucked it, which I'm not quite sure why, but he's obviously a cult hero for what happened in Amsterdam. Now, there's a lot of Tottenham fans saying, you've got to keep Bergwijn because he's been linked strongly with a move to Ajax. I actually think that that's completely the wrong attitude, and one of the reasons why Tottenham have been going backwards the last few years, this emotional connection to certain players because of, you know, one moment or a couple of moments. You know, if they were looking to sell him before the game, they should probably still be looking to sell him after the game, you know. So if it is to be his last manoeuvre in a Tottenham shirt, then it was certainly a good one. I'm still not quite sure what he is. Maybe he is a striker, but... It was, it was a dramatic night, wasn't it? I think I saw a stat that it was the latest ever comeback win from when a team
was it?
Losing. And then, I mean, it's, you know, not often this happens in a football match, but you know, two outcomes matched at 101 on Betfair Exchange before Tottenham won at 1,000, and you know, probably you wouldn't have backed it at 1,000, really, would you? You know, with what, 20 seconds to go.
Absolutely. They're my favourite kind of footballers. The ones you don't really know what they are, but they just seem to turn up and do well. It's been a good week for Spurs, not so much Chelsea. Now, on the last episode of Bets Club, we were previewing Chelsea's game against Manchester City, and you were relatively confident for Spurs' chances there. And they certainly weren't poor, but they got beat. And then it really was a disappointing display against Brighton in midweek. What's going wrong at Chelsea at the moment?
Yeah, do you know, the Chelsea game for them against City, I did lay Manchester City in that game. And I was a little bit annoyed, really, because, Chelsea had some big moments in that game, the Lukaku chance being one of those. And you go, oh, what's wrong with Chelsea? There wasn't that much difference from how they played in the Champions League final, which they won, the FA Cup semi-final, which they won, and then the league game that they lost against Manchester City. I thought the Brighton performance was the one that was more alarming, because there were times in that game where Brighton were... and Brighton are a good team, obviously, but, you know, and we like Graham Potter on this show and have mentioned him many times, but they were moving Chelsea around, like, a lot, and... Chelsea fans were singing about being champions of Europe, but if you were just looking on that game, you know, without knowing the history, you maybe would have thought that they were talking about Brighton, to be honest, the way they were passing and moving. Chelsea, I mentioned this a few weeks ago, and then they seemed to get a second win, but it looks absolutely knackered again. And Tuchel said afterwards that they're tired. I mean, Lukaku's like shoulders are slumped, aren't they, at the moment? I mean, he doesn't look like he's showing for the ball. He was rowing with Ziyech. When Ziyech scored, he didn't even celebrate the goal. I don't know. It's not for the first time. It just feels like that sort of Chelsea dressing room just needs somebody to just wake them up a little bit. There's a lot of egos in there, and it can be difficult. The one thing I don't like about Chelsea at the moment, really, just as a general thing, is the way that they're attacking. Don't feel like they're creating a huge amount of opportunities. If you go back to even to the Carabao Cup successes over Tottenham, where they totally dominated, deserved to win. the three goals were just gifted to them really by really bad Tottenham errors, and two of them were set pieces. And from open play, you're just lacking something at the moment. It's probably the injuries to the wing backs. You know, Chilwell and James, a really big part of what Chelsea did when they were playing well earlier on in the season. I don't think sort of, you know, Alonso isn't as good as Chilwell. And obviously there's a big drop off on the other side when Reece James isn't there. So maybe the wing backs is the biggest area where Tuchel, you know, needs to do something. I mean, do you even move away from playing, you know, three at the back if you haven't got the wing backs to properly sort of play in that system? I think they could go to a back four, but then I think Rudiger is much better in a three-man defence. So Tuchel has to weigh all of that up. He's used to the big egos. He's managed them before. He's got one himself. But we know from, you know, past managers, if you don't win the league at Chelsea, you're in big trouble. And, you know, they're now in a battle for top four, really. This is a big match in that. I mean, if they were to lose it, and I don't think they will, but if they were to lose it, you would really start to worry, I think, for their top four hopes, which is something a couple of months ago just never even dreamed of, really.
Absolutely. With all of that being said, though, Chelsea are the favourites. They're 4-6, Spurs 9-2, the draw 3-1. Of course, Mark, we have got recent kind of head-to-head form to go off in the Carabao Cup. It didn't go the way that your boys Tottenham wanted it to. How do you turn it around ahead of this game on Sunday?
I think from Tottenham's point of view, you know, don't make the silly errors, because despite being outplayed, the three goals were all down to sort of problems in the Tottenham defence. You know, Tanganga gave the ball away for the first, then he headed it onto Ben Davis for the second goal. And then at sort of the return game, Gallini, who won't be playing as long as Lloris is fit, you know, he made an error for that one, came out for a cross, missed it, and Rudiger scored. So I think that Conte will be sort of just going, you know, don't make the errors. And see if Chelsea can open us up, because, like I said, they've been struggling to do that on a consistent basis for a long time now. You know, Chelsea have only won two of their last nine games in the Premier League, and in those matches, they scored two penalties in each of the two games. So from open play, this is a team here that's, you know, not doing enough, you know, to be considered, you know, sort of that top three. We had it as a big three, didn't we, really, at the for much of this season. They're not creating enough to be considered part of that at the moment, which I don't know if I'm sort of almost giving my bet away with the way that I'm sort of talking here, Jack.
Well, I was going to say, it sounds as if you're leaning towards maybe a Spurs victory here.
No. I just think that Chelsea are, you know, they're more likely winners, could still nick it narrowly. But the best bet for me is under 2.5 goals. It happened in five of the last six meetings between the two teams. Given the state of the league table, I think that Tottenham will, you know, under Conte, will look to sort of keep it 0-0 for as long as possible and try to frustrate Chelsea. Whether they're good enough to do that, I'm not so sure. But, I'm expecting this to be a bit of a grind if Chelsea are to get the victory.
The rest of the Premier League gets started on Friday evening. A real humdinger down near the bottom of the table. Unbelievably, Norwich City have found themselves with a small chance of survival. And my favourite stat is they've now won more games combined than both Newcastle and Burnley have. It's Watford against Norwich. It's Friday. It's 8:00. How do you see this one going, Mark?
Watford to win, I thought odds against was more than fair, to be honest, in this game. They only conceded one shot on target last week against Newcastle. Looks like the new signings making a big difference. And we did say that, didn't we, for the last few weeks. Let's judge Watford at the end of the transfer window. We knew they were going to make moves. Samir from Udinese, Kayembe, the midfield, has come in. Kamara at left back as well. You know, it looks like they've all improved the team in key areas. And you know, Norwich, you are right, Jack, about they do at least win matches. Newcastle and Burnley are more draw specialists, aren't they? But Norwich are bottom of the shots on target per game. I think this is a match where both still need to win. And I mean, I think the Watford odds against is a reasonable bet. I mean, it's a tricky card. I'd say that they're sort of probably in sort of the top two or three, I would say, in the Premier League this week, around about 11 to 10.
Worth noting as well, Watford, I think one of the only teams to beat Norwich both home and away in the Championship last season. Saturday's action gets underway with Everton against Villa. We've already discussed the recent managerial changes at Everton. Well done as well to Kahuna, who said he fancied Coutinho to score last week. Mark, you weren't sure about how Coutinho would start things off, but a dream way to get things going for him.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously, you know, was involved in and got the equaliser. I still think that Ramsey, you know, is going to be a bigger player for Villa over the next couple of years. And that my concern was that, you know, you're trying to fit too many of those forward players in. What would that mean for somebody like him? But, you know, as long as Gerrard can still get Ramsey in the team, I think that, you know, Villa are onto a good thing with him. And but, yeah, it was the dream start for Coutinho. I was looking for this one, both teams to score. Everton have only won one in their last 13, but I do think that Richarlison, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, if they can get them two together, that makes a difference. And Villa have scored in all bar one league game under Steven Gerrard as well. And they are probably a little bit unbalanced at the moment, Villa, in terms of trying to fit all of these attackers in.
It's Brentford against Wolves up next, the first of the 3 o'clock kickoffs on Saturday. What's your bet for this?
Yeah, so you've got to look at the sort of average, so sort of per 90 minutes, really, rather than the sort of stat tables at the moment, given how sort of teams are completely at sort of, you know, four and five games in hand on others. So in terms of the shots per 90, both of these teams are in, you know, the bottom three. So they're in the bottom three for shots creating actions and bottom four for shots. I mean, that means that unders is a strong play, but that's 4-7. So I completely understand why it's 4-7. That brings the draw into play for me. It's around about 21-10. And yeah, I can see a tight game.
Leeds against Newcastle. Newcastle desperately searching for a win.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure they'll get a win, but I am going to go for Newcastle or draw double chance. I've got nothing positive really to say about Newcastle other than, you know, this could be a good time to be playing Leeds. Forshaw and Firpo both went off injured, didn't they, against West Ham, which sort of decimates that squad further. They played really well at West Ham Leeds. Can Jack Harrison score sort of another hat trick? That, you know, I just think around about even money, don't want to be back in a team that's got that many players out, even against Newcastle.
Manchester United against West Ham. Manchester United victorious against Brentford in the week. Can they continue winning ways here?
Do you know what? I thought that 10-11 was fair enough to back Manchester United, and I haven't said that too often on the pod in recent weeks. The Brentford performance, first half, nowhere near particularly. Thomas Frank said, oh, it was a bit like the that sort of famous, was it David Lloyd, we flipping murdered them type line that he used. But they did come back. They did win the game. I think there'll be some confidence boosters there for a couple of the younger players that were on the score sheet. And what I would say about West Ham is they've been away from home to three teams in the top half of the table this season. Man City, they lost that 1-2-1, fair enough. I think the other two, 2-0 against Arsenal, 1-0 against Wolves, didn't play well in either, probably more comparable to this trip to Old Trafford and could end it similarly in defeat for them.
Saturday tea time, Manchester City travel to Southampton.
Yeah, Southampton can cause City problems. They got the 0-0 earlier on in the season. City only had one shot on target in that game. They have won 12 in a row, though. I think they'll make it 13. I'm going to take a massive punt here, 22-1. Southampton to be winning at halftime. Manchester City to win the game at 90 minutes. Southampton are fifth in the first half table in the Premier League and 18th in the second. How often have you seen Southampton sort of start quickly and not be able to sustain that pace? It's something that seems to happen quite often. And in a game where not much stands out, that could be a fun bet.
A bonus long shot. Excellent.
Yes, absolutely. Brilliant. I nearly put it as a long shot and then I thought, no, I've got another one for that.
Oh, brilliant. Two this week. Excellent. Let's move on to Sunday's action. Arsenal host Burnley. Are Burnley going to actually play this time, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I've forgotten what Burnley are like. Well, yeah, I'd say that, but I mean, we all know what Burnley are like because they've been like it for 6 or 7 years, but it's difficult, isn't it, for them? There was a story in the Daily Mail today about potential issues with their takeover. I think that's concerning. You know, they've just sold Chris Wood. Hasn't been that much movement in terms of sort of who they've been linked with. looks, the squad looks short on quality.
It feels as if people are almost assuming that they'll win their games in hand as well. Yeah. But I think I know it's a cliche, but you would rather points on the board, wouldn't you, at this stage?
Well, I mean, it depends how many points, I suppose.
They've got to play the games at some point, and now they're going to have to do it in a congested fashion.
I think that, generally speaking, football fans add on too many points for their games in hand. I mean, Manchester City might be able to put it in for about 2.5 per game in hand. You know, if you think about how many points Burnley actually sort of collect over a season, you're not going to put these games in hand for that much. Difficult game to call this because obviously we don't know what Burnley's COVID situation has been like. And Arsenal have got this huge game on Thursday. We're speaking before that one against Liverpool, and they had their own game called off rather controversially, if we leave it at that, on Sunday against Spurs. So until you know the team news, not the easiest to call. I'm going to go at this stage, Arsenal to win and under 3.5 goals, only 7 goals in the last 5 meetings. I'm assuming Burnley turn up at the Emirates, try to park the bus and probably sort of fail at some stage to keep Arsenal out.
Yeah, it's a big game in the Carabao Cup for Arsenal. Liverpool also play on Sunday. Where are we at with Liverpool? Of course, we know the key names are at the AFCON. They take on Palace on Sunday. They were really, really poor against Arsenal in that first leg. And then they kind of cruised past Brentford. I guess where are we rating them without Salah and Mane?
I think it's hard. It's really hard to sort of place it because it doesn't happen that often, does it? I think Firmino and Jota, it's not bad too to sort of, you know, if you've got those two fit and available to be able to come in, but they wouldn't have won the Champions League, I don't think, without them. They wouldn't have won the league without these two players. They probably go from being sort of the second best team in the Premier League to, you know, being in and amongst that kind of Arsenal, Tottenham, United sort of bun fight for sort of Champions League qualification, I would assume. I'm getting this game another big price that's not the long shot. Check the team news. But if James Milner doesn't start, Fabinho be on penalties, 22-1 to score first. I think, you know, if James Milner's not there, then that's the bet you want to be on because, it doesn't seem to be factored in too much here that he could be on pens. And he's, that goes for the game. If you're listening before the Thursday night game, that also goes for the game at the Emirates as well.
You're throwing out long shots left, right and centre here, Mark.
Well, you can't.
A real treat.
You can't get a 22-1 winner unless you back a 22-1 winner, can you? So, I mean, you know, in football, you don't want to be grinding out 10-11 shots, you know, all day, every day. Let's have a few darts.
Absolutely. Let's finish off the Premier League card then with Leicester against Brighton.
Yeah, Brighton draw no bet. Leicester obviously got to recover from, you know, what happened to them on Wednesday against Spurs. Even allowing for that, I thought they were really poor for most of that game. I know they've got a lot of injuries and that is going to impact on performance. But, I mean, Tottenham could and should have been out of sight even before that. I mean, the expected goals for Spurs was 3.7 in that game, as well as the three that they got. There was two cleared off the line. Kane hit the bar. He missed a one-on-one. Like, you can't keep giving up those kind of opportunities. And if you look at Leicester's defensive expected goals, they're now the sort of fifth worst team in the Premier League. Only Newcastle, Leeds, Norwich and Watford, and you know, they're sort of teams that have been at the wrong end of the table all season long. They're the only teams that have got a worse expected goals difference against. And I'm just going to go through, this is the sort of chances they've been offering up in recent Premier League games. So it's 3.7 against Spurs. There was 2.5, 3.4, 0.6 against Newcastle, then a 2, 1.5, 2.7, 2.4, 1.2. They're giving up just far too many opportunities. Obviously, Evans is a big loss, and Ndidi being absent, sort of just you're missing something from the midfield as well. If Brighton play like they did against Chelsea, I think they'll really fancy their chances.
Excellent stuff. There's the Premier League card for you. Let's head into the EFL with Dan Charles.
And now we're welcomed by EFL Racing Post Sport expert Dan Childs. Are you okay, Dan?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah.
Well, I've got a question in for you from Lucas. It's about the fixture congestion, actually. Interested to see where you stand on this. So he says, will the fixture congestion, in your opinion, Dan, mean more or fewer goals? He's talking specifically, really, I suppose, about lower down the English pyramid. Have you got a have you got like any, I suppose, gut feeling as much as anything else as to whether tired legs is going to bring about more or fewer goals as the season goes on?
My gut feeling would have been that it would lead to more goals, really. You know, just thinking about, you know, with a lot of fixtures taking place in a short space of time, could there be, you know, unbalanced teams, you know, if managers have to make a lot of changes from game to game, tired legs as well, if they go with the same sides. But, I mean, then I looked at sort of Rotherham. That was the obvious example from last season when they had to sort of, you know, pack in a ridiculous amount of games towards the end of the season. And their last sort of eight games when they were, you know, they were trying, had to play them in, I think, less than a month's time. There were seven of them games went under three goals. And they, if you remember going into them games, they actually needed to win games, didn't they, to try and get out of trouble. But, I mean, maybe that was just, you know, a single example of a team where, you know, it went against the trend. But I would, you know, personally, I would think if there's tired legs, that's more likely to lead to defensive errors and therefore, you know, maybe a few more goals.
OK, but it's not something you would sort of necessarily overly factor it. You'd be more thinking from a tiredness point of view that they're supposed them to win the game.
I think you've got to go game by game, really. I mean, if there's, you know, obviously if the, you know, the team's got an unbalanced defence, you know, then there's a, you know, maybe all, you know, all the holding midfielders are injured, you know, can't play, then, you know, that's when you expect there to be a lot of goals. But I think you've got to, as anything, really, got to go back game by game.
Okay, how many bets have you got for us this weekend?
Got the three again, one in each of the EFL divisions.
Okay, start at the top.
Yeah, starting the Championship, Coventry, I fancy at home to QPR to get the win. Just think that with Coventry, I mean, they had a poor sort of end to 2021, but they started this year really well. We've got a 1-0 win over Derby in the FA Cup. We all know how well Derby have been playing recently, so that's a good result. And then the 4-1 at Peterborough last week, although Peterborough having a poor season, they did it in really good style, Coventry winning that game. I think they're looking now to sort of push back up towards those playoff places. So playing at home to QPR, who are in the playoffs at the moment, it's quite a big game. Coventry have been strong at home, 7 wins in their 12 home league games. And I just think QPR, they're still missing a few of their African Nations players. Seni Dieng, who I really rate as one of the better goalkeepers in the Championship, he's still with Senegal. Ilyas Chair is still with the Moroccan team. And, you know, two big outs there for QPR. They did win at home to sort of suspension hit West Brom last weekend. West Brom have been on a really poor run. I actually think this trip to Coventry looks a bit tougher, and I fancy Coventry to win it.
Okay, and then you said you have one in League One and League Two. So, yeah, fire away with those, please, Dan.
Yeah, League One, I mean, I think there's a lot of big clubs in League One this season, but Sheffield Wednesday are certainly one of the biggest. They're playing away to Oxford. Both two teams sort of pushing to get into the playoffs and possibly higher if they have a really good finish to the season. I fancy Sheffield Wednesday actually to win this one. They're 3 points outside the playoffs at the moment, but of their 25 games, 14 of them have been away from home. So there's a little bit of an imbalance there. Maybe, you know, there's scope for them to climb a bit higher. They've got a very strong squad full of championship experience. You think the likes of Barry Bannon there in the midfield, Massimo Luongo, another, you know, Australian international midfielder who I rate. I mean, they're bringing in, more recently, they brought in a winger, Nathaniel Mendes-Lang. I mean, he had a career with quite a few clubs. I think he's played at Cardiff, was one of them more recently. He's really a championship standard player. Played against in their 4-2 win, dominant 4-2 win at home to Plymouth last Saturday, and he was excellent. Scored a goal in that game. I think he'll cause a lot of problems for Oxford, who have kind of gone off the boil this year. Got only 1 point from 3 games this year, Oxford. Last two games, had a 2-0 loss at Lincoln and a 2-0 loss at Wickham last weekend. Something seems to be not quite right at Oxford at the moment, so I'll take Sheffield Wednesday to win there at the Kassam Stadium.
And then League Two?
League Two, going to go for Leighton Orient home to Port Vale. I mean, Orient have not actually played a league game since December the 18th. Now, you could say that's a bit of a worry, the lack of action. They've slipped to 13th in the league, but I still think they're going to they've got a chance of pushing for promotion with the games in hand that they've got. They did play, you know, fairly recently in the FA Cup third round after that long layoff. They lost 2-0 at Stoke, but the standard of their performance was actually pretty good against a strong Stoke team. It was an even game, could have gone either way. And I think if they reach that sort of level at home to Port Vale, they're going to have a good chance. So look at Orient, despite the 13th place league position and the lack of games they played, only 22. They played fewer games than 22 of the other 23 teams. They've still scored. They're the fifth highest scorers in the division, despite that. Their goal difference is actually the second best in the division, plus 16. That's the sign of a team that's got scope to do a lot better and climb a lot higher. And they're playing against a Port Vale team on a bit of a poor run at the moment. Four defeats in a row for them. First choice keeper Lucas Kovalan is serving the second game of a three-game ban. They're on a bit of a tough run. I think Leighton Orient will beat them.
Okay, thanks, Dan. So just as a recap there, we've got Coventry, Sheffield Wednesday and Leighton Orient.
Lovely to hear from Dan Childs, as always. And thank you, as always, for your EFL-related questions. You can get any question you'd like into us at Mark Langdon or at Racing Post Sport, and we'll try and feature them in future episodes. Mark, let's get the top line of all of your best bets for this week. Player prop shop. I know the listeners love this section, so let's give them a treat this week.
Yeah, well, I've got 16-1 and 20-1 anytime goal scorer options. One of them, he scored in midweek, and I'm slightly wary of going for Webster again after he did it. But this is Operation Target Leicester at set pieces being in full swing. So I've got Webster and Byrne anytime goal scorers at 16 and 20s. Absolute giants. We know that Pascal Gross puts in a really good delivery from dead balls. And Leicester, I don't think they're getting that much better at defending set pieces. I mean, Kane hit the bar from a header on Wednesday night. There was a one that came in from Sanchez where he should have scored that was from a short corner. I don't know what they're doing wrong. I don't sit there and just sort of analyse every corner that Leicester defend, but there's something fundamentally wrong with the way that they're setting up, and I think that everybody is targeting it, and so will I.
Well, don't blame you after that. You've already teased two of your long shots. Let's get your proper one now, then.
Yeah, so it's Union Berlin at 12-5 to beat a crisis club in Germany, Borussia Mönchengladbach. They've had 5 defeats in 7 in the league. Gladbach humiliated in the cup by second division Hanover in midweek against Leverkusen in the last league game. 32 shots against, 14 of them on target. Jan Sommer saved 2 penalties and they still lost the game. So they look like a team, like I say, in crisis at the moment. Two of their sort of big name players, Zachariah and Ginter, are both out of contract in the summer. Ginter's been dropped from the squad altogether. Talk of Zachariah maybe going. Union are through to the quarterfinals of the German Cup. They beat Hertha in a derby delight for them. They're 5th in the Bundesliga. They're a small team, which is probably why we're getting 12-5. But if you look at like their performance data, the league table, just what they're doing, suggests that they're kind of top 6-ish this season, which is a surprise. But, while they're performing at that level, they could easily go in at a big price against Gladbach.
A German long shot. How about a treble this week?
Yep, so playing it reasonably safe. So we've got Torino versus Sassuolo, both teams to score in Serie A. 15 of Sassuolo's last 16 games of cop for BTTS in Serie A. Leipzig to beat Wolfsburg, 5 wins in 7 now for Leipzig. We napped them last week when they won 2-0 at Stuttgart. They won in the German Cup as well in the week. I want to stick with them. I think they're a team on the up under Tedesco, who's coming to replace Marsh, the former coach who got binned off. And then finally, talking of teams that could be back, Barcelona to beat Alaves on Sunday night. I think Barcelona are a team to just keep an eye on in the next few weeks. I think that Xavi has brought a sort of a better style of play to them. They're starting to create chances. And I wouldn't be surprised if they went on a decent run sort of in the second half of the season. They really need those points outside of the Champions League spots at the moment in Spain.
Yeah, absolutely. What about your strongest bet of the week, the nap?
I'm going to go for the big dunk factor at Goodison and
oh, you know.
Well, not in terms of a win, but I think both teams to score. I think that he's going to get the crown on side. I think that having Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin back, I've mentioned this already a couple of times, so I am repeating myself, but I do think that they're big, big difference makers for Everton. We've got an article going in Friday's Racing Post just about the impact of, you know, when one of those players is missing, never mind both of them, on Everton in terms of their shots and their chance creation. So I think, you know, that will really help them. And Aston Villa are unbalanced, and I like them going forward. I'm not so sure about, as Steven Gerrard tries to fit all of those players in, whether they're good enough defensively now, you know, and finding that balance is tricky. You're so good defensively at Rangers. Obviously, this is a different sort of beast entirely when you're not sort of four fives on to win most games. So I'm going to go for both teams to score at Goodison in the early game. The reason I didn't put it in the top treble was only because I know there's a lot of people out there that don't like the early Prem game going in their multiples. So if you wanted to put like an accumulator maybe and bump up the treble to an ACCA, that would be the one to go for.
Excellent stuff. Nice selection there. Let's answer some of your questions. The first comes in from TikTok Granville on Twitter. And he asks, Mark, with the rise of women's football, coupled with most people's ignorance, there are plenty of good betting opportunities. Are the Racing Post considering giving it more coverage?
Well, we have a sort of Super League column every Saturday in the Racing Post or on racingpost.com on a Friday. We have tried to cover the Champions League, but bookmakers were really slow in pricing it up. I mean, our attitude to sort of women's football and women's sport in general is to, you know, to cover as much of it as we can when sort of the bookmakers price it up. In terms of upping it, I don't know if we'd be sort of doing any more, but I certainly think a column, a weekly column is sort of a fair representation of sort of where the game is at and sort of where the interest is at for the time being. But of course, if it grows, we'll give it more.
Absolutely. There you go. Tip top Granville. Next up, Stefan. Simple question. What's happened to spread betting?
Yeah, I mean, this was, you know, in the 90s and sort of even in the early 2000s, spread betting was really popular. And I mean, I don't want to say it's completely gone, but, you know, I'm not one that sort of looks at the... I've got an account, but I sort of don't tend to log into it really anymore. I think in terms of where it's gone wrong, or so I think the fun has gone out of it. You know, they once the regulations became stronger, they kind of had to rein in some of the more fun things that they used to do and that used to grab headlines. And I also, you know, the fixed odds offering now is so strong, isn't it? You know, you can back players over a certain amount of shots, you can back possession, you can back all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I just think that, you know, most people just understand that, you know, I have £11 on to win 10 back on a 10 to 11 shot. And, you know, there's that wariness of, you know, the worst that can happen is the worst that can happen in spread betting, you know, and that's the way it is. I think that, the fun's gone out of it. And I think the fixed odds offering is just so strong now.
Do you have any personal kind of memories of a particular spread bet that you've had?
There's been good and bad ones. I remember a bad one was the first time that somebody told me you've got to sell multi corners in every game. You know, it's way too high. Of course, the first time I did that, it was Liverpool, a trip to the Valley. They played Charlton, end of the season game. And it just felt like every shot got tipped around the post. It was so multi-corners, first half corners multiplied by second half corners. That was a really unpleasant experience. A really pleasant one and this was not my bet. Somebody alerted me to the fact. Well, he asked me, he said, do you know who takes Bayern Munich corners? I said Toni Kroos. And then he said to me, he's wearing, I think it was like shirt number 20 on or something. And he's like, have you seen sort of Sporting Index's quote for Bayern Munich shirt number corner, you know, by the shirt number of the corner taker for the total in the Champions League final against Chelsea? And I was like, no. He's like, right, well, you should be looking to buy it. And I can't remember how many corners they got, but if you remember the game, Bayern absolutely battered Chelsea for 90 minutes and before they lost it on penalties. And that was a really joyful occasion when spread betting went good.
Oh, brilliant. Charlie is a Southampton supporter and always appreciates the positive comments regarding his club. You seem to be the only person giving Hasenhüttl all the credit he deserves. My question is, why doesn't Ward-Prowse get spoken about more often? He isn't only a free kick taker. Yeah, you do have a soft spot for Southampton, Mark, don't you?
I just think that they're better than sort of, you know, their budget. And that's really what you're looking at from a manager. Always seems to lose his best players, doesn't seem to moan about it, just gets on with it, coaches the team well. You know, he's got a philosophy, he wants to promote younger players. And yeah, maybe Charlie won't be so pleased. I'm saying he might look at Everton. I think he's a good coach, absolutely. In terms of Ward-Prowse, I think he's probably, he should probably be playing higher up the Premier League than he is. I don't think he'd be good enough for the very sort of top teams, I don't think, in the Premier League. You'd imagine that kind of Tottenham Arsenal level. I think he could go in and sort of play there. You could argue that sort of Jordan Henderson, maybe talent-wise, isn't this amazing player, but you put him in that kind of Liverpool philosophy and how important he is. And, you know, could Ward-Prowse do something similar at a team like Liverpool if he was given the opportunity? I don't know, is the honest answer. Really not sure. I think the other factor with Ward-Prowse, from an England point of view, is he's just not as good as Bellingham or Rice. And that's no kind of real, you know, there's no shame in that. Bellingham and Rice are two, you know, really top young players. And I think with Ward-Prowse, it might be on the eye, doesn't it? He kind of looks like he's working harder than, say, Declan. You know when Declan Rice just glides past people? And Bellingham got that same kind of look about him. Ward-Prowse, he just feels like it's a bit more industrious. And maybe that's why he doesn't get spoken about more often. I mean, I like him. I think he could play higher than Southampton. So, you maybe have to ask some of the other national journalists why they don't rave about JWP on a more often basis.
It feels as if Ward-Prowse is one of those players that you constantly just feel is young. He's 27 now.
I think he's
always been 23.
Yeah, I think he's probably a lifer now, isn't he, at Southampton? That you would
absolutely
imagine. As long as they stay up, don't really see him moving on now. The time's probably just, he's probably just missed that boat. Although he seems happy enough at Southampton, and yeah, there's a lot to be said for for playing for a team just where you liked and where you like playing.
Quite right. From the Premier League to the National League, Stuart says, how far does Stockport win the National League by, and who wins the playoffs?
Well, I mean, last week we were pro Notts County, so we can't jump ship just yet. But there's a lot of confidence about a lot of teams in the conference. So, I'll have to bow to Stuart's superior knowledge. If he thinks that Stockport are going to absolutely romp away with the title, but we can't jump ship on Notts County 1 week after we put them up.
Yeah, we're Team Notts County. Art, what's this one? Art Vandelay. Art Vandelay. Outside of the Racing Post, who do you think is the best footballing judge?
I think best is quite difficult, really, to sort of, you know, you couldn't say that. Oh, this person, you know, it's not like golf, is it, where, you know, you've got, you know, when Tiger Woods was like the undisputed number one. I think that there's a lot of people I respect outside of Racing Post. We've had quite a lot of this sort of Paddy Power guys. Jason's the one that comes on most often, but even before that, Emmett and, you know, Sean and, you know, a couple of the others really there that have, I think of all when they've come on the pod, have always, shown great knowledge and good understanding of betting. The two I'm going to put up, though, again, are ones that, you know, because I like what they do, I've, you know, managed to get them in the Racing Post to do content for us. One is Nick Goff, who used to be head of football at Coral. I've known Nick quite a while now, and, you know, he bets professionally. I really like the way that he not only sort of gets the numbers, but also has a feel for, you know, just stuff that might be occurring. And, you know, he puts football knowledge in with those numbers, and also not afraid to back sort of, you know, really big crazy prices on certain things. And so always like Nick's work. And Mike Holding is another one. You can hunt him down on Twitter. We've used him in the Racing Post. What I like about Mike is the unique sort of his unique take on football. You know, he's not looking at whether a team's won four in a row. He's not even really looking at expected goals, although he has been on sort of that data train for a while. He kind of assesses managers and the way that they act in press conferences. And again, a bit like Nick, you know, he's happy to put out, you know, and bet on just like crazy odds every now and then. And, you know, I'm not somebody that can just sit there and sort of churn 10 to 11s out all day long. You know, I do like people that are, you know, have a go. Well, there's a basis behind it, but, you know, really aren't afraid to sort of back big outsiders if they think the price is really wrong.
Absolutely. Nick Goff, certainly an interesting and an entertaining follow on Twitter as well, if the listeners don't already. I really like the work of Ali Maxwell and George Ellick as well, in terms of an EFL perspective. As a supporter of a football club who are often in the EFL divisions, I think it's a difficult league to cover because there's so much going on, and they seem to get the tone right. And also from a betting perspective, usually fairly close.
Ali's
to the,
another one that we've used on Racing Post, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you kind of, although you're saying outside of Racing Post, I mean, the thing is, the ones that we like best, we try to get on into our Racing Post product.
Are you just saying you're a very shrewd recruiter, Mark?
No. Cause there is a caveat to this, actually, is that there's probably people out there that I just don't know. You know, so I can only speak about the people I do that, you know, you might get some other professionals who are quite annoyed by the fact I've not mentioned them. But when that question came in, those were the first people that came to mind. And, you know, it's about offering something that's maybe a little bit different to what others are doing as well, I think, which is important.
100%. Let's finish with Matt. And I'm glad that Matt's raised this point, because I was actually thinking this last weekend. Do you think the lack of attention to the amount of injury time is a problem? Now, last weekend when I was at the Norwich City game, I know I bang on about it, but it's the games I followed the closest. The first half against Everton, there were two goals, two injuries and a lot of bookings. And there was 1 minute of injury time. I suspect the ball was in play for probably half of the 45 minutes. Is it something that you notice, Mark?
I think it's one of the great scandals of the game.
That's strong.
Well, nobody seems to care how many minutes. When you think of, like, there are sports like NFL where the clock is like one of the most important aspects of the, like, of the sport, you know, like managing the clock and stuff like that. Now, football isn't the same as that, obviously, but I mean, the people just seem to make it up, and nobody seems to care. One of the ones that drives me absolutely crazy is when a referee books a player for time wasting late on, like an injury time, and then doesn't add on like another 30 seconds or whatever. I mean, look, you'd be much better off having a stop start clock and playing for an hour, and at least then everyone would know where they are. The ball tends to be in play, you know, that's a healthy amount of time, an hour. You know, like, you can get these goalkeepers take a minute off the clock over a goal kick, and you know, nobody, the referees don't seem, they won't book somebody for time wasting, like, in the first half normally. And I'm thinking, why not? Like, particularly when, you know, you're away at Man City and, you know, you see the goalkeeper moving the ball and sort of putting on, and it just makes, it really makes me angry. So I'm a big shout out to John Moss, Arbiter Moss, for adding on the time at the end of that Leicester Spurs game.
Yeah.
You know, because there was a goal, so you've got to add on another 30 seconds. And, you know, it would have been quite easy for him to have blown the whistle, wouldn't it, at that point? And he didn't. And, you know, it happens a lot in, like, the Bundesliga. They just play about 2 minutes injury time. And, you know, it's just the done thing. And I'm thinking, you've probably got another four. You should be having another 3-4 minutes here. And that's quite a long time, isn't it, you know, to get wrong. And first half injury time is an absolute joke. It feels like it's illegal to play the correct amount of first half injury time for a reason. I don't understand it. Yeah, it's a scandal.
We should get, as paying football fans, a pro rata discount of our tickets for the minutes that we don't get to see. I think you'd be good friends with the chap who sits behind me at Carrow Road. Every game, he brings a physical stopwatch and we'll pull it out of his sort of wax jacket when the clock strikes 45 and 90. And we'll fume with real rage if the advertised amount of time isn't played. So I think we should get you two together, maybe a future podcast guest, and you could just rant about injury time. I think that'd be good fun.
Get him on.
Yeah, absolutely. We haven't got a show next week, Mark, have we?
We're going to take a top flight international break, Jack.
Should we kind of go? Can we get maybe a warm weather break on expenses or something? Can you get that passed?
We're more likely to be Bognor than say
Barbados.
Than Barbados, unfortunately.
There we go. Well, we're going to have a break. There's no Premier League action next week, but we'll, of course, be back the following week for more. As always, I always say it, but I'm going to say it again. Mark puts up a lot of selections in these podcasts. Please don't feel the need to back them all. If you do have a flutter, then only ever gamble with money you can afford to lose. Mark, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you so much for listening wherever you are. And we'll join you again very soon. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.